Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in each episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food we eat and the clothes we wear to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas to allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. But the best part is, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives that will enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to find out about the sustainable products and services gifted to us from our guests on the show, then why not head over to our Instagram for more information? The handle you need is at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about packaging, more specifically, the bulk aisle, where you go to dispense how much you want of something, generally nuts or grains. But the question is, how many hands have been in there before yours? And why is that aisle in the grocery store always so messy? Well, to shed some light on all of this and offer a solution is the CEO and founder of Tainer, Camilo Geraldo. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Louis, it's a pleasure to be here and with everybody else at Be Curious.
I appreciate it. I'm certainly curious about this subject because single-use plastic is definitely something that is very much talked about when it comes to environmental awareness. But first of all, tell me a little bit more about Tainer and what it actually is.
Yeah. So Tainer is a refill kiosk that helps people buy food and not plastic. Crazy concept, right? But we have a refill kiosk technology that allows shoppers to come and do this in a hygienic, fun, control experience so they can get their goods, whether it's a trail mix or their lentils or cereal, in a plastic-free fashion.
Okay, well, I want to talk a bit more about the technology a bit later on, but let's go back to the beginning of shopping, if you like. You know, that's many decades ago. But isn't bulk shopping kind of the way that we always used to buy our groceries?
At the bulk aisle right now, it hasn't changed for 100 years. Now, back in the day, again, wasn't any near close to 9 billion people in the planet, and things were grown locally, and the distribution of these goods was a lot, I guess, simpler from a supply chain standpoint. But then 70 years ago, we introduced plastic packaging to tackle some of the other products, more fresh goods. And those introduce, you know, a bigger challenge is how do you move food across state lines, how to keep it fresh and hygienic. And this became kind of the norm for all goods, food goods in general. So regardless if it was non-perishable or perishable, our default was to put it all in a package and then do it the same way.
So how much plastic do we actually use when we're kind of buying products like this? Because I think people don't even think about it. You know, you're getting your almonds in a bag of plastic. You finish a bag of almonds, you throw the plastic bag away. You buy another one.
And that's just the end of it, right?
And that's not the packaging that actually comes to the store in the first place. Like in all of the manufacturing, there's so much plastic there to get those individual bags of almonds into the store.
We have a plastic addiction. Like you said, even what the consumer sees at the end is just the tip of the iceberg. But getting those products from suppliers to the packaging lines, to the distribution lines, to the store shelves, to your hands, to then another plastic bag, to then, you know, it keeps going. The answer is that we don't know, but it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And how do we know that? Because landfills and oceans are just now showing and throwing everything back at us. It's like, this is how much plastic you have put. And you've seen plastics dating back to the 70s now recently being founded. And that's because we didn't have any way of measuring this or tracking it.
I just got chills when you said that. Was there a recent find or something like that in the 70s?
Yeah, all the time. There's articles coming out with pictures in the, you know, Pacific Gyro, and they're starting to collect similar items from yogurt any packaged good dating, you know, 60 years. So it's pretty amazing.
And so none of this plastic that we're finding can actually be recycled?
That's a big question, recycling. So recycling has to be now, I think we have become a lot more educated on what that really means. And the fact is that there always goes between 7 and 9%, which if you ask me, that's not a lot, of the global plastics are recycled every year, which is a very low number. And we've been recycling for 20 years or more. So they can be recycling, but it's really hard to do that because there's a lot of different types of plastics and they have to be segregated. They have to be cleaned to be then put into a pile of the same types of plastics. And we're using typically around 5 different types of plastic, even up to 10. Even one product, a simple water bottle, has 2 different types of plastics. And they're recycled completely different because of the chemical composition of them. So it's really hard to recycle plastic. It's actually downcycle. And then whatever we do with this, it's not really feasible because it's really expensive to recycle plastic as opposed to getting new virgin plastic and then putting it into new products. So it doesn't really give us anything in return, which is why petroleum companies continue to push virgin plastic production.
So when we put things in the plastic bin, in the recycling bin, you're telling me that they don't actually get recycled.
Yeah. It makes us feel good, and we have done a lot of good progress implementing technology in recycling facilities. But until 2018, here in the United States, everything was shipped out to Asia. They just put it in big containers, and we didn't know if it was going to be recycled, how it was going to be recycled, if it was going to be profitable or not, until they closed the doors. And now we're starting to figure out, what are we going to do with all this trash? But at the end of the day, we haven't found a good solution, and we're still in the 7-9% recycle.
Just to backtrack on what you said, a water bottle is made of 2 different types of plastic. So does that mean it can't be recycled, or does that mean it gets separated and then those individual types of plastic can then be recycled?
So think about it like cooking. Butter will melt in a completely different temperature than sugar. Mm-hmm. Same things happens with plastic. So they have a very specific melting point. And if you put them together, one will be damage and the other one might be surviving, and then that pool or all those things might not be usable for later on. So the whole purpose of recycling is so actually you get recycled, reused again, right? And to do that, you have to be very meticulously about it. So when you put all these things in one trash, and some have peanut butter on it, and some have milk on it, and some have grease on it, and then there's all these contaminants, to be able to separate these things, just think about it, like We don't have the infrastructure to do that at the scale that we're producing plastic. And that's really what is important. Mm-hmm. We are demanding too much from our recycling facilities. They're just not built like that. And again,
it's a lot
70
of manpower.
Years, that's it.
Yeah.
For 70 years to come back and figure this out, like, oh, now we started into recycling, that it hasn't been built from the beginning, I think it's a really hard challenge to do.
So if we haven't figured it out, what's happening to it all?
So it's accumulating to landfills. It has been sent to Asia. You can see, you know, one of the biggest mountains in a South Asian country is a plastic landfill. And then communities are being affected, and then they're getting paid $2 a day to sort through this plastic, where then is equal, like, is it washed or is burned, which also releases a lot more chemicals. So it's really bad all around.
We know about the plastic in the oceans as well.
Yeah. So landfill is actually the best case scenario. Oceans, then that's like a lost cause. Yes, there's some other projects out there that are trying to clean up. So it's more of a cleanup, reactive response than a proactive, sustainable long-term solution.
What kind of chemical toxins are released actually when it's burnt?
It is a petrol-derived chemical. It has a lot of additives depending on what the composition it is and what the purpose of the chemical or the plastic you're trying to build. But it's not any similar than you burning gas. Not any different, I'm saying, than burning gas and having those fumes directly affect you.
So not good for the atmosphere as well as for our lungs.
Correct. Yeah.
What about the microplastics as well? Because this is a big topic of conversation of late.
Yeah. So plastics don't break up. They break down. And that means that they're just due to environmental processes and animals in the environment. They start chipping away and they start making smaller pieces and smaller pieces and smaller pieces. And then they get accumulated into the whole food supply chain. And then it goes back to us because we eat those animals. So that's one way of ingesting. And now later studies have found that even the air has microplastics, and it has come to our even placentas. Just read an article a couple of weeks ago that are found in testicles. So they're literally everywhere. On average, we consume about 7 grams of plastic per month, which is about a credit card. Mind-blowing stats out there.
Crazy. And then we wonder why that children are being born, with more challenges or birth defects or, mental struggles and things like that. There has to be some kind of correlation between the two.
Absolutely. So they block hormones. They, you saw it maybe 20 years ago when they started marketing BPA-free plastics. And BPA was one of the first ones that shine a light on how toxins can affect your health. That's just one out of the hundreds of chemicals that you can find in plastics. And then there's a direct correlation to the impact you have. So now add that to the other chemicals that you find in plastic and, like you said, how it can affect you.
So if we go back to thinking about our shopping, mm-hmm. we still shop for produce individually. Mm-hmm. So why don't we do that for our bulk goods, our dry goods?
Consumer and shopper habits is the short answer. The way that this has been introduced to us and the idea that something in a plastic wrapper is a lot more sanitary, it's cleaner, it has been processed in a facility. And then, of course, yeah, there's size. You're getting a banana versus an almond. There's a completely different size. You can say, I want to get one pepper, one banana, and then you don't get one almond, right? You need a container to do that. So even though in the produce, you still see the majority of people putting all their produce in plastic bag, right? Because mm-hmm. they don't like to put it in their cart.
Yeah, the dirty cart and then the cashiers touching them and things like that. So there's, as you say, still sort of some plastic that's taking it from the store to our home. Yeah. And in some supermarkets, certainly during COVID, you started to see individual apples wrapped in plastic or, a bag of 3 bananas wrapped in plastic. So again, there was just so much more plastic consumed in areas that we just didn't need it. But people stood up at that point mm-hmm. and said, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Why are we wrapping our apples in plastic? And yet didn't quite get their heads to the point of the dry goods and things like that. Maybe as you're saying, because of size.
Yeah. And one thing that is very embedded in our consumer behavior is to see a price point associated with a unit, right? With one banana, with one apple, or a bundle of them. That's hard to gauge when you're talking about loose items. So that's the other thing is the control and the psychology of the consumer to know what much your spending power is. Mm-hmm. So when you find something in a package and you're like, I pick it up, I'm like, okay, this weight is this much. You might not even know how much it weighs. This is like a good amount. And you're saying this is $4, $7. Yeah, I'll put this in the cart or I'll leave it out there. So it's that decision-making that packaging allows the shopper to do in a more efficient manner. So that's something that is also ingrained in our behavior when shopping. But going back to the pandemic, that also shined a light on how much of this we were consuming. And then this is also unlocked something that we haven't seen ever in the online market, that now people start doing groceries online, which, think about it, is where we go the most, where we spend most of our money after housing, United States at least. But it was never available online until 2020. And that only happened 4 years ago. So you could practically buy anything online except for food, or you were able to, but nobody was doing it. So now we were getting things packaged in more packaging. And then I took so many pictures of how ridiculous it was. One tomato in one bag inside of another bag. I mean, it was just, got out of control. So I think people really woke up to that.
They really did, I think. And, I do appreciate sometimes some of those home delivery mm-hmm. services when it's like farm to table, because they do just, mm-hmm. there isn't loads of plastic there. It is just, fruit. And certainly when it's just one of you, you're getting a few different types of vegetables rather than when you go to the supermarket, you have to buy in bulk mm-hmm. because it's a family supermarket and mm-hmm. you need to buy 10 tomatoes in a single bit of plastic. You can't just have two of them. Right. So that some of them do give you a little bit more variety, if you like. But what is the problem then, do you think, with the concept of kind of using the scoop and, taking out like a scoopful of beans and putting them into a jar? you know, what are people's hang up about that kind of thing? Just the cleanliness, or is there more to it?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more to it. Convenience. Mm-hmm. We're on the go. You know, we hit on average 2 to 3 supermarkets per in a 2-week basis. We're not only shopping for us, but for our family, for our friends. You like put yourself in the shoes of a shopper. You walk into a store, you have many aisles to hit. You go down the aisle, you're like, what I want. Maybe you have a shopping list where you know what you want, but there's a whole experience behind, you know, groceries and trying new products. You see it in plastic packaging is beautiful. It's a nice presentation. It has all the branding. It has all the information you want to see. You can actually sometimes see through it so you can see the actual product. And right there, you make that decision. I'm going to put it in my cart and walk away or not. Now, that's the packaged goods. Let's throw in the bulk aisle. You're there. You're like, okay, I want that. Now you have to get a bag, by the way. Like, it's supposed to be plastic free, but not a lot of the groceries out there that offer bulk allow you to opt out of the plastic option. So now you have to get a plastic bag that is usually pretty big. You can fit like up to 2 pounds there. And then you have to dispense and you have to weigh and you have to find a pen because also almost impossible to find a pen. Always really small baby pens. And then you have to write the PLU number and then you have to wait and then you have to do that for each product. So now you add 7-10 other steps to the whole process.
It's a lot more time consuming.
Yeah, that's it. It's not convenient. And most importantly, it doesn't give you the control. So,
but it does give you control on how much you want.
Okay. Have you shopped the bulk aisle? Have you experienced how much, you know, when you dispense, how much you get? Do you really have control over that?
Well, I try to, but you have to do it very slowly before exactly. It all rushes out. And then you think, oh, that was twice as much as what I wanted. And you have to pay for it.
Do you? So what we found out is really interesting. And that's where one of the reasons we started Tainer is that for beans and rice, they're varying $2-3 per pound. Yeah, people were like, all right, dispense a little bit more. What is it going to be? But when you're talking about high price items like almonds and cashews and pistachios that are varied from $10 to $15 a pound, somebody dispense a little bit more than they want to, they abandon that product. And that accounts for almost 12% of product losses in a supermarket, which is really high.
The whole bag they'll abandon?
Yeah, the whole bag gets abandoned every day. They have to clean this up. They can't put it back into the container because it's now not sanitary and it has come off of there. So there's a whole food compliance things they have to meet. Once that it's released, they don't put it back. So that's all waste.
Oh my goodness, I didn't think about that. And I know some people get very concerned about mold in those things. How long have those oats been sitting there? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I know if they've come there in a sanitary way or they haven't been sitting in a warehouse, you know, gaining moths or something like that even?
Any pest. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the best case scenario is that somebody actually goes through the whole process and leaves with whatever they have. And maybe they got disappointed because they ended up getting a surprise that they have to pay more. But then you add all these other concerns that you just mentioned. From a whole food supply chain, we have no visibility of where is it coming from, how fresh it is. We're talking about open containers. We're talking about then being available for anybody. You know, the bulk aisle, you know, who's the favorite shopper in the bulk aisle? Kids. They love it because they get free candy. They get to try it. They put their hands in it. And you don't know how many times we talk to customers saying, that was the last time I bought in the bulk aisle when I saw just a kid just putting their hands. Top of it. So yeah, it adds a lot of things. Now the plastic wrapper kind of eliminates that, you know, possibilities from the consumer's mind.
Well, some bulk aisles have the one where you dispense Correct. It though. You're right. But some of them have the lid that you lift off and then the scoop. So I can understand with those ones. Mm-hmm. That there is that hygiene problem as well.
Yeah.
But that's to me how I remember, you know, getting sweets and candy as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, you used to go into the sweet shop and it would all be like that. You'd pick one or two out, put them in your pick and mix bag, and then you pay for the weight of those at the end.
It sounds like you did this in another place other than the United States from your accent. But there are some theme parks that offer candies that you can mix and match. And it's specifically for kids. But we're talking about candy. We're not talking about like, you know, whole food ingredients. So that was a fun experience. And
long time ago.
Yes, I guess it was more mind free. Now, COVID came around and that really tipped the needle over. So we saw 20 to 50% of people stop buying in the bulk aisle because of hygiene concerns.
And so is this where the idea of Tainer came in, or how did it come about?
Yeah. So Tainer, like I said, it's tackling that hygiene issue. So we have a control, closed lid environment that also gives the shopper the control of knowing how much you're going to purchase, just like you're buying a packaged good before you dispense it or put it in your container. And it's fun. You can do the mix and match. You have a way of measuring that. And we give you options of containers that are not are plastic free. So now this ties in into the whole connected store experience where similar than the reusable water bottles, you've seen a lot of the dispensers that tell you how much plastic is being averted from the landfill or the oceans. So we add that level of visibility or transparency that the shopper, every time they go to the supermarket, will now know that their choices do matter and they add up. How I started Tainer, didn't tell you this story, is that I used to bring my container to the bulk aisle. And I did it for a couple of years in the same supermarket until one day I brought all these glass containers. They were heavy. Some broke in the process. I filled up like I used to do it. And I got a new cashier that day, and she didn't know how to tear the container. And she started screaming at me in front of everybody. You can't do this. I'm like, I've been doing it for years. You just have to subtract 1 pound out of this container. She didn't hear me. She just kept screaming, and she transferred everything to a plastic bag, waited, transferred everything back to my container, and threw the plastic bag away while she was still screaming and not listening to me. And I'm like, all right, I'm putting all this effort. I'm going through all these steps because I don't want an excuse anymore. So when we talk about technology, we're trying to remove that from the human, you know, decision or labor, because I understand they have a lot to, you know, handle. Cashiers and any floor level staff, they have a lot to do to add another complexity. They want it to be streamlined. And so I think that's where technology comes in. Is how do we go back to, you know, the most fundamental way of doing things with a little help, with a little tool. And I think that's what Tainer is trying to do.
And so how does it solve all of those problems that we've just been talking about?
Like similar to a vending machine, right? You picture that you want something from a specific slot. And
G7.
Exactly. So now you're saying, all right, you come in and you want almonds, and you can say, you want, I want $5 of almonds today because it's what I can afford. And he translates that to the weight that it's going to dispense and the fill level. So you can do it by fill level. It's all very intuitive. Just like filling up your gas tank. You can only purchase what you can afford and what it fits in your gas tank, right? So, and it just dispenses into your container. Simple as that. You can do it from the kiosk touchscreen or your mobile app. You can make an order and then just fulfill it right there in front of the kiosk.
And so you have to bring your containers with you. Can you purchase them there if you forget them? Yeah. Or, you know, how do you get around that kind of single bag plastic?
Luckily, the consumer behavior has been changing a lot. Now we are taking our water bottles everywhere. Now we are bringing our grocery bags, reusable grocery bags. And we forgot it. We have plastic-free options. And that's the whole thing. So whenever we deploy, we create a system where either sometimes we have deployed where the supermarket incentivizes the shopper by charging by the container and then give them the credit every time they bring it back, and they will take care of everything. That's one way of implementing that. Now, if you forgot it, again, there's a paper cup that is plastic free that you can use that.
They do that in Germany and certain parts of Europe. You know, if you're buying, I think it's, you know, even if it's just water bottles or something like that, you pay a deposit on it and you bring it back, you put it back into the supermarket containers, and then you get $2 back per water bottle.
That's it.
It's the same at like Christmas markets, for example. They'll serve it to you in an actual China mug, mm-hmm. but you have to take the China mug back to the place where you got it from, and they give you your $2 back.
We come from there. So we talked about how we used to buy many years ago. The milk mill model is not too different from this, right?
Yes.
It used to come with fresh milk. You give the containers back, they will reuse it. In a lot of Latin American countries, we still use primarily glass containers for our soda cans and our soda bottles and products, and they will take it back and refill it. So yes. So there's a whole process that goes along with, depending on the container, if it's glass, if it's paper, or if there's actually plastic containers. So our model is if it fits, it fills, right? So we have a standard container size, just like your water bottle, that you can fit the typical amount that you'll find in a supermarket. And then working with the retailers and the brands, we can incentivize shoppers to bring their container either by giving them, you know, a bonus or a coupon or a discount. On the other hand, if they choose not to use a reusable container, they will be charged for that. So that's being passed on to now the responsibility of the shopper. We're giving you the option. You just have to make the better option.
Okay. And do you think people will do that? Or do you think in some ways convenience is so much more important to people that they don't care?
So that's the trick there, right? We need to make it as convenient, as fun, and as sustainable as possible. So that's really what we're testing on right now. And we have seen great results. When you see your receipt and then you're saying you're saving $2-3 every time, that's going to make a difference. And you're buying, you know, typically somebody buys anywhere between 7 to 10 pounds of these products on a weekly basis. So now you're talking about $30-40 savings every 2 weeks. I think people will see the savings. And now we talked about it. When you put something in the recycling bin, you kind of feel fussy inside. You feel like I did the right thing. And I think new shoppers are starting to wake up to that and say, yeah, I can do something and I don't have any excuse. And I can see the direct impact that I'm having by every choice that I make.
But it's like using reusable bags when you actually go to the grocery store. You have to remember to do that and take them. And I know it's something that I do, but I do see an awful lot of people just using the bags that they give you in the store.
Right.
Even if they're being charged 10 cents for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really slow and painful transition that we need to make. Now, the good news is that the new shopper generation already has that ingrained. They don't have bad habits. They're learning new habits. So the new generation, Gen Zs, are graduating college right now. They will have 70% of the spending power and they don't have bad habits. They just have good habits and they're very aligned to what they want to see in the world because it's their future that is depending on that. So we're hopeful that the ones that are making the transition right now find easier ways like Tainer to embed that and then connect it with whatever apps they're using to remind them. I'm really bad, for example, at the grocery store bags. I usually don't keep them in my car, which I always tell myself that I do. If I'm coming from home, I always take them with me and I always have it right next to the door so I don't forget. So it's all about, like,
if it's planned, you know, but people stop at the grocery store on the way home, don't plan.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it's when really you need hard to keep it in the car.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that's where the brands and retailers come in to kind of give that last push. And now, this is what we have found really interesting, is that it's in the brand's best interest. So if the shopper didn't follow as planned, then you come in and say, let me give you a bag. Let me let you borrow one container. Let me help you with that. So that's where we're seeing the big shift. Mm-hmm. It's been a big demand or push from a big majority of the shoppers, but not the majority as of right now. But then big enough for big retailers to say, we need to do something about it. We want to keep people coming back to us. Because now, after the pandemic, you started seeing the proliferation of zero waste stores popping up left and right. And there's around 3,000 in the United States, and they keep growing. What does that mean for retailers? One person decided not to come here and go somewhere else. And that's a big concern for them. So that's when this kind of whole system and implementing in the right way to help people, you know, give them a little crutch here and there to adopt these new habits, come and play, and then become partners.
I think there are actually probably some stores here in the US that are actually trying to encourage people to come back by giving them something as a deposit, if you like. Erewhon, not to mention, you know, names, you know, if you buy one of the juices, you can return the glass bottles. They will recycle, reuse them. But of course, that brings you back into their store where you can't leave again without buying more. As everybody knows who goes to Erewhon.
Yep. You kind of get hooked into that.
So it's a very clever marketing technique, but also very environmentally friendly.
That's it.
So it depends whether people are actually doing that or they're still putting those bottles in the recycling or something at home.
Correct.
You know, and again, that's, as you say, the consumer behaviors that we need to sort of address and encourage to make sure they understand where that recycling is going and if it's actually being recycled.
Right.
If they put it in the green bins.
Now, the last piece that I want to mention here that is really, I think, what drives the needle is you're saving money. So packaging accounts for around 40% of the product's costs. And guess who pays for that?
The consumer.
You do. Mm-hmm. We do. So imagine if you say all the products that you have, and you heard about shrinkflation lately.
Shrinkflation?
Yeah.
No.
So as inflation goes up, they don't bump up the price for those products. They just put less in the same bag.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So if you look at all the packaged goods, they're full of air. So if I tell you, look, you're going to pay at least 15%, 20% less on all your products across your groceries, or at least in the bulk aisle, for Tanner, which we can do by eliminating the packaging and you're not getting air. And of course, you're saving the environment. I think, again, these are drivers that will motivate you to develop new habits.
And what kind of things can we see on the Tanner dispensary?
That's a great question. We have four main categories. So we're talking about the legumes. Those are your lentils, your garbanzos, your beans. Then you have the grains, your quinoa, your bamboo rice, which apparently is very popular here in California, which I'm not that surprised. You have your nuts. So that's the fun category because you get an instant reward because they're snackable, right? So you get all the variety of trail mix. You get your individual nuts. There's just a plethora of options that you can have there. But we don't stop there. We have coffee. We have even just any dry dispensable goods, even pet food or dry detergent. So these are all options that we now offer in our dispensary.
And who decides what goes into the dispensary? Say, you know, a store, a grocery store wants to buy, 5 meters worth of Tanner. Mm-hmm. Like, do they decide which kind of items go into the dispenser?
Yeah, just very similar than the bulk aisle. We provide the technology for them to do it in an efficient manner. And this is the back end side of things that we mentioned is how do we optimize the whole supply chain inventory management so they can do it very easily. By the way, groceries have a really hard time keeping up with all the demand. They have to manage 25,000 SKUs on a weekly basis that they have to put in the shelf. They have to keep it organized. They have to make sure that it's not, you know, they have to keep track of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And they're causing major burnout to staff. So in bulk, you literally think, hey, we're reducing this labor and making it very easy and very streamlined. So that's what our tech-enabled solution allows them to see from the back end what needs to be refilled, what is selling more, what was the last time that it was refilled. So they pick all of that. We just give them the tools, the software, and the dispenser so they can do it. And then they can, you know, transition away from a 100-year-old system like the bulk aisle to the 21st century way of doing bulk.
And where are you at with the developments? Am I going to see this in the grocery store next time I go in?
Hopefully really soon. We are in the beta testing. I started Tanner in 2021, and we produce a prototype that allows us to demo this and see the interest. And this is right after the pandemic. So we started learning, wow, this is a big pain point. We got calls from all over the natural grocers space here in California and actually nationwide. And we did a lot of short-term demos when we saw the reactions of shoppers and specifically those that, you know, where like, I'm in between, I'm trying to do the bulk out, but you know, this hygienic thing, and I feel bad every time, and I go back home, and I'm like, why is this all this plastic waste? And I can't do anything about it. So they were frustrated about that. But the retailers were really excited to, you know, stop using barrels and scoopers and having to clean that. We heard customers, and you brought this up, that they have to get rid of their inventory. I'm talking about thousands of dollars within a day because they found a moth in one of these containers, and they don't have a way of tracking. And since everything is kind of open containers, they have to, by regulation, have to get rid of everything. So we started hearing all these people, the whole bulk out inventory that they were lasting, you know, a month, they couldn't trace where this moth came from. So maybe to jump from one place to the other. So it's a very, again, antiquated system that they have no control of tracing any of this. So that's where we started. And that's really where we focus on was how do we make this better for our customer, which are the retailers and brands, to adopt this in an operational way. And then we made it really sexy. So that's what we keep hearing back from shoppers that have used our technology is that it's attractive.
Sexy?
It is sexy. I'm like, wow, sexy is the thing that keeps coming back.
Interesting.
Yeah. Our dispenser is just very, you know, kind of like brings a little bit of retro and but with tech. And you can see the product's very organized, very clean. You are guaranteed that you're not going to cross-contaminate. And the allergens part of it, we reduce that. I forgot to mention that. We eliminate all of that concerns because a lot of people that would like to buy that, but they have a really bad, you know, not allergens or yeah. So we're bringing in that. So we put all that together into the prototype. We tested, and we just a month and a half ago we did our first beta deployment with one of the largest retailers in the U.S.
Fantastic. And is it going to be in that large retailer in the U.S.?
So we are working on that, and everything's pointing out that how do we roll this out to a lot of these stores, right? So that's the bigger feat that we have is how do we make this mainstream? Yes, it can work for one store, one specific location with one type of demographics, but how do we roll this out is a big step. So it's all about testing. It's all about trying the waters. We're not here to create a solution that doesn't have a really pain point that we can validate. And as a sustainable, you know, technology innovator, it's all about the shopper adoption and the feedback that we get and how do we turn that into the next step. So hardware is a very thing to bring to life and is a new product. But I've been doing this for the past 10 years in different segments and specifically in the circular economy. And we're just, from everything that we have learned, we're just introducing that systems thinking approach to know how things are made, where are they made, how long they're going to last, how can we support that. The last thing that we want to do is just put a dispenser out there that is going to keep breaking and then we're going to have to then waste mm-hmm. and then build a new one. So we're making sure that everything is up to spec for our standards so we can support this for 10, 20 years to come and then hopefully roll this out in the next year. That's our goal. So there's legislations that are now specifically targeting packaging all across the United States. And there's 9 states that are building that. 5 already passed. California is one of them. Minneapolis just passed them maybe a couple of weeks ago, which forces producers to take back all their packaging. If not, they will be fined. So they
what
have
do you mean
to
by take back all their packaging?
Be responsible for the packaging. So okay. Instead of putting it in the recycling bin where that's taxpayers' dollars and we have no way of tracking that and it's not being successful and we're going in loops, is saying that's not the public responsibility anymore. It's your responsibility because you are producing that. So if you're not tackling that and we don't have a way of, you know, tracing reusability or reducing your waste, then you're going to be fined X amount of dollars.
And so a bit like the bottles that we were talking about before where people actually have to return it and then they'll get their money back. It's like the responsibility of the store.
Correct. That's it.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's great to hear.
And reuse refill is really putting on the stage as the solution because there's no other, again, recycling is not a solution. Their government is already saying we cannot mm-hmm. deal with this. This is a lot of money and is wasted because it's not doing what we have.
What's so interesting to me too is how other countries are actually so advanced mm-hmm. with this already. You know, we're already doing this kind of returning to the brand. Mm-hmm. You know, so if they're already returning it to the brand in other countries, it's just like we need to catch on over here. The US is such a big country, and you know, wants to lead the way in so many ways. Like, why can we not get on board and lead the way in this?
I love that you bring that perspective. The U.S. is so behind on this. This is, seems to be like such a kind of like hurdle and big challenge that, you know, we put it on the consumer hands to face this. And when it's not the case in other countries, like you said, Germany, France is super advanced in this.
Scandinavia.
And it just again and again shows that there's a big advantage, business advantage of keep people coming back and purchasing your product and even a walking brand, a marketing play. Imagine now, like, so single use, you buy the brand, yeah, it's right there, and then you throw it away. I don't know. It's plastic packaging on average lasts with us 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it will stay in the planet for 400 years. So just put that in perspective. And you throw it away, so there goes your brand, there goes your marketing, there goes your graphic design. Now imagine if you have, in the Erewhon case, I have planters in there. I use it for all kinds of things on the go stuff. So now you have that brand going everywhere. It's a souvenir.
I make smoothies and put it in there and then take it with me.
That's it.
You know, they're not Erewhon smoothies, but like, it looks like they are.
Exactly. There you go. You can trick it. But it is their marketing and you're going to do that. So Europe is a lot more advanced and the United States just has to be, you know, I think
the difference with Europe is that it doesn't have to go back to the same place that you took it from.
Correct.
Of course, unless you're at, you know, a Christmas market and you've taken a glue vine and you've got your little mug, mm-hmm. you have to take that back mm-hmm. to the same place, of course. But if you've just got your Coke bottles or your water bottles, you can take them to any supermarket store. You don't have to return them to one and then you get your deposit back from the machine and you go shop.
And that's a really important thing to remember, that is, if you look at the majority, I'm talking about in the 70s to 80% of the plastic pollution is by five major brands. So how come these five major brands haven't come together and say, let's put a global, you know, system that works within each country, because each country has its own, you know, supply chain and constraints, infrastructure. But to take all these things back. And like I said, I grew up, you know, in Colombia, where you put your glass bottles of Coke and Sprite into a basket and they'll pick it up, you know, on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. I think the US just got really addicted to plastic and the convenience of it. And then, you know, if you toss it away, you forget about it. Until we start seeing it washed up in our oceans and you cannot escape it anymore. So, how do we adopt something that we have learned from other countries and other brands that are doing great jobs at that? Just recently, I stumbled upon this great company called Kadeya, and they have a water dispensing technology that also takes back that container. So they have a dispenser for water, sparkling or regular water, and it gives you an aluminum water bottle, and then it also takes it back. So it's a mini kind of recycling or reuse station that can be deployed anywhere. Might be a great speaker for your podcast in the future. They're based out in Chicago, but again, that's the concept of just water. How do we apply to these other products that don't need any packaging?
What I recognize is a bit of a through line with a lot of these interviews I'm having on Be Curious is that we want to go back to the ways that we used to do things. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about farming and regenerative farming, it's like the ways we used to do it, you know? And it's so interesting that we've come up with all of these new technology, which at the time seemed like a great idea, but now we're realizing the implications of all of that. Mm-hmm. And actually that living more naturally, more sustainably like we used to is really the way forward.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point of you know, realizing that that's the technology has come a long way to either support us mm-hmm. or affect us. And we have to make the choice as humans that are
evolving.
Where's the line of like, really, do we have an excuse?
Is your idea patented?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how do you get around the allergens issue? I wasn't quite sure there.
Yeah. So our containers are completely segregated from one to the other. So it has one dispenser per container, and it just guarantees that there's no cross-contamination between one to the other. So that's really where we can divide the products in the aisle or in the dispenser. And the only thing is that it's modular. So you can add as many container kiosks right next to each other to create a continuous aisle, but you might very well have his own independent, you know, nuts dispenser. So we have these categories that allow you to do that. And it's all about the sanitation process too. Again, so all most of our R&D has been, before it gets to the shoppers, how do we get this in the most sanitized and streamlined way that you can track, right? Mm. From supplier all the way to shopper's hands.
Well, I'm very excited to see these out in the stores, hopefully within the next year, as you just mentioned. But until then, what kind of tips do you have for our listeners who are wanting to shop more plastic-free?
Where do I start? First of all, it's really hard. I just have to say it. This is not like, I don't come here as a, you know, there's a perfect solution. And I'm still learning. And so there's a lot of zero waste stores, and that's where you have to start supporting those zero waste stores that are popping off left and right. There's really good ones here in LA. There's one called Regrocery here that is beautiful, and they have great customer service. And they give you this experience that that keeps you wanting coming back. So try that first. And the other thing is that just being mindful of where you're buying from and what supplier is producing this. So you can see that there's a shift between those producers and big brands detaching their name from this because they're not socially and environmentally responsible. So it's just backing up with your dollars or those brands that are doing the right thing. There's a lot of ways that it's just consuming less. I think that's the bottom line. It's consuming less of what generates more waste. And I hate to say it, but I don't think there's a great solution. So zero waste stores is my go-to. And unfortunately for me here in where I live in LA, all the bulk aisles went away. So I don't even have that option. And so that's made it really hard for me to stick to my normal grocery store routine and not go out of my way and spend more time or more money in doing that. So it is following those companies. And the last thing that I will say, there's a lot of initiatives out there. Reuse, refill is a growing industry. And there's a lot of nonprofit organization. There's a lot of legislations that are passing. And if you want to see that, then you have to support in your local government and make that petition.
Well, I think you've definitely given us a good case today, yeah, talking about all of the plastics and then, of course, all of your new technology. So I wish you the best of luck with it and hope to see it on the stores very soon. In the meantime, where can people follow your journey and know where to look out for what you're doing with Tainer?
Yeah, you can find us at gotainer.com. Instagram handle is gotainer and LinkedIn as well.
And Tainer is spelled?
T-A-I-N-R, Tainer, without the E.
Without the E, yes. And we'll make sure we put links to it in our show notes as well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure today. And if you want to keep up to date with all of our other episodes, then you can follow us on Instagram at becurious_podcast. That's where you'll find out about all our giveaways that we have at the moment here with the show as well. Until next time, everybody, I'm Louise Houghton. Thank you so much to Camilio, and stay curious, guys.